We'll go on to case number four of the day, which is 052791, USA versus Warren.
Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Hill.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I represent Tony Warren. Along with me is Delal Gerard as co-counsel. Judge, essentially, we're asking you to return this case to the district court so that the defendant can receive a fair trial with all of the cards on the table. Essentially, from the beginning of our involvement in this case, we sought to get the government to provide us with discovery regarding Tony Warren's position as a confidential informant for the Secret Service. Initially, the government started off by denying that he was an agent. They reversed themselves on that, came back around and said that, yes, he was. Ultimately, their position was that he had been deactivated at the time of the conduct which constitutes the offense for which he was convicted.
Mr. Hill, other than paperwork informing Warren that he had been deactivated, which the government has repeatedly maintained doesn't exist, what information are you claiming the government has failed to produce?
Well, the pink slip, Judge. I mean, they talked about deactivation formally. Matt Quinn, when we were given the opportunity to examine him, he's special agent, Secret Service. Judge Bucklow allowed us an opportunity to take a telephone deposition of that gentleman. During the course of my examination of Mr. Quinn, he on numerous occasions talked about deactivation and formal deactivation.
But is there any evidence at all that official deactivation forms exist and are used by the Secret
Judge,
Service?
I have no evidence of that, but I do know that in contrary to the representations that were made to the defense, on the eve of trial, documents begin to show up. On the Friday before we were scheduled to go to trial in this matter, after being told that everything involving this case, document-wise, had been destroyed on 9/11, because these documents were in the World Trade Center, the Friday afternoon, it was one of those notorious 4:30 on a Friday afternoon phone calls where you get some discovery and you know you're scheduled to go to trial on Monday and you know that this case has been continued on a few occasions. The judge is anxious to make it go to trial. We get that document after having been told that nothing existed. Then, I'm sorry, Judge Evans.
Maybe I just want to understand this. Yeah. I thought... Now, the record is fairly clear that he was an informant in some Nigerian thing or other.
Yes.
For about a five-week period from in 01, March to April of 01. The events in this case occurred a year and a couple of months after that. Are you saying that there's more evidence that should be uncovered here to show he was acting as an agent in July of 02 when he was doing these?
Yeah, a couple of things happened after that. The government claimed, first of all, he claims that he was never told that he had been deactivated.
But two agents said he was, that they told him. The testimony was sworn testimony from two agents that say he was told because he was... altered a check or something like
actually
that. They didn't want to use them anymore.
They actually contradicted themselves. You have Quinn saying that he told Warren that he had been deactivated. He didn't use the word deactivation, that he was no longer working for the Secret Service. Then you have another agent who actually testified who said that, oh, no, Warren was under my supervision at the time that that conversation would have occurred. The point that I'm making...
But does he say that... The incidents in this case the transactions that were going on in this case were under the direction of one of these agents.
That's what Warren says.
Well,
that's what Warren
tests. Does he say authorized him to do these things?
He was under the impression that Matt Quinn had allowed him.
But under the impression of that, was he?
He was never.
Was he meeting with agents?
No, he wasn't meeting.
I'm wearing a wire. I'm going in.
What occurred? My understanding of what had occurred was that Tony was to go deep cover for the Secret Service. They allowed him to operate as a on his own because of the nature of the organization that he was attempting to infiltrate.
For 5 weeks?
No, it went beyond the 5 weeks. He contends that at the time of the conduct constituting this offense, he was still working. That was our defense. That was our public authority.
No, I know, but...
That's his contention. That's his contention. There was a conversation that Tony Warren had with Assistant United States Attorney Donahue, where charges were brought against Mr. Warren in New York, alleging essentially the same type of transaction, which is the subject of this prosecution. Those cases, that case was dismissed. Tony was under the impression that, I mean, this was part of his continuing role as a secret as a confidant for the Secret Service. If he was not an agent at that time, at least it was left in his mind that he was, because he wasn't prosecuted in New York for essentially the same conduct for which he's charged with having violated here in the Northern District of Illinois. He's saying, and we're saying, that two problems occurred here. Number one, we were never provided with timely disclosure of all of the information bearing on this case. There was a discovery order that said we're entitled to that at least 3 weeks before trial. As hard as we try, we do attempt to get it late and work with it nonetheless, but we were at a severe handicap with the late disclosure of that evidence when the judge had indicated that 3 weeks before trial we were entitled to it. We get it the Friday before the Monday that we pick a jury in this case. We worked with it nonetheless. Then when we go to trial, we're hampered by the judge saying that we can't use our main cross-examination tool, our main impeachment tool, the prior statement of Matt Quinn. We are hampered during the course of the trial because the judge says you can't use this because it's not a sworn statement. The judge later says, well, I made a mistake. That's not the rule. But at that point, it was after the trial was over. And then we get an explanation that says, well, it wasn't impeaching anyway. Well,
is it your view that... all right. Never mind.
It's our position that we were entitled to a prior inconsistent witness a statement instruction. Had the judge ruled properly, we would have gotten that instruction. And the one question that the jury asked during their deliberations, can we get more information regarding Tony Warren's deactivation, which was our defense in this case? Judge, the fact of the matter is that when you look at it, you say, gosh, this seems somewhat bizarre. He's working as an undercover agent for it, trying to infiltrate a Nigerian check scheme. But the fact of the matter is that we should have been allowed an opportunity to present that defense with all of the discovery up front, not have to try to figure it out in the midst of the battle of trial. We had rested our case. We had rested our case, and we're under the impression that we were getting ready to argue the case. The government then decides that they're going to call in rebuttal this Assistant United States Attorney Donahue, and then gives us another statement that Tony Warren made when he spoke with this assistant who had dismissed the case in New York. I'm saying that Warren is under the impression the government dismisses the case in New York. Obviously, this is consistent with my understanding that I'm still working with them trying to infiltrate this theft ring. Judge, I'm not saying that Warren was right or wrong in what he thought. I'm saying that when there are rules put in place, discovery rules put in place, that defense counsel is entitled to the benefit of those discovery rules. And not getting those documents hampers our ability to do the job that we are attempting to do on behalf of our clients.
The matter that he's indicted for here, the check, checking account with this other guy who cooperated, and the money going into the accounts, that did not have any relationship to the Nigerian thing, did it?
Yes, he was under the impression.
There's no Nigerian connection to this incident that's charged in the indictment here.
Judge, it's the same kind of conduct that had occurred.
Well, sure, dealing in cocaine can be one thing and another, but they don't necessarily have to be related. This was not related, was it?
The evidence never came out as to how Tony Warren was able to cause those checks to get to Stanitka. That never came out. There was never any testimony regarding the origins of those checks. Government never presented that. They just said these checks showed up. Tony caused them to show up. Whether or not they were tied into the Nigerian scheme, to the where they came from, how they originated, we never got that evidence. All that we have is Tony at one point is working for the government, going deep cover to infiltrate this check scheme. We have him now getting checks consistent with that scheme. Now, whether they came and were involved in it, I don't know. That never came out. That evidence was never presented.
Exactly what documents did you not get? What documents?
We did not get the letter.
What?
I mean, the memo, Donahue's memo of his conversation with Tony Warren. He had the assistant United States attorney had a conversation with Tony Warren where they were talking about Tony working for the Secret Service. It's now the season for the checks. It's happening again. We never got that document until after we rested our case, Judge.
But Warren was a participant in the conversation, so he would have himself possessed any exculpatory statements that would have been contained in those notes.
Judge, but I think that under Bagley, we're entitled to get discovery that would cause defense counsel to explore lines of examination, investigation, that we might otherwise have explored if we'd had the information in a timely fashion.
But it was Warren who called Donahue, so it's really far from clear that the notes are covered by Rule 16, which relates to statements that are made by a defendant in response to interrogation by a person the defendant knew was a government agent. So I'm just having a little problem.
I see. Judge, in addition to that, we went as far as even issuing a Freedom of Information request to try to get the information that we wanted. I mean, we thought and we still suspect that there's more information regarding Tony Warren and his situation as a confidential informant. We get a document that they claim all documents have been destroyed on 9/11. We get a document the Friday before we go to trial that they claim never existed. We then, after we rested our case in rebuttal, get another statement where the assistant United States attorney had a conversation with Warren, which was material to what our defense was, which is he thought he was still working for the government as a confidential informant. Now, that issue of fact, of course, was within the purview of the jury to decide. I'm saying that because the defense was hampered by the violations of the government vis-a-vis discovery, we were not able to, we might have done a better job being able to present that defense and may have been able to do a better job in convincing the jury that he did have the authority via public authority. That was the one question that they asked about, Judge.
Of course, and you were able to capitalize on the absence of any written documentation.
We did our best, Judge, but, you know, I would have liked to have had the cards on the table. You do your best to go with the flow as it comes, but the rules say that you're entitled to get that up front. The other part of this, Judge, is the fact that the judge made a determination regarding a 2-point increase for finding that he had lied. I don't know that that was an appropriate finding for the judge to make, nor was it an appropriate finding for the judge to deny him 2 points downward for acceptance of responsibility. He stipulated. He said that what he did, he did. He never denied that. We're saying that he should have at a minimum been given 2 points downward for acceptance of responsibility without a 2-point upward adjustment. Just because the jury decided not to believe his version doesn't mean that he lied, and he's clearly stipulated, Judge, and we would ask that if you don't reverse the judgment, that at a minimum you reduce the sentence because of the problems we raised in our brief relating thereto. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Okay. Ms. Scott.
May it please the court. Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to start off by first assuring the court that the government in this case did all that it could to locate all of the documents that were in connection with the defendant's status as a CI.
But why did the government initially deny that Mr. Warren ever worked as a CI?
Because the government had no idea. The defendant was a CI originally out of the New York office. And when he was initially arrested, he told the agents that he was working, that he had been a CI. He did not give names of the agents at that point. Based on the defendant's request to the court that, or he insisted that he was a CI, the agents here in Chicago contacted the field office in New York. All of the documents that were in that office had been destroyed on September 11th. The agents, Agent Quinn and Agent Koch, had been transferred from the New York office. So it took some time to figure out, is this true? Eventually, the agent, the Secret Service supervisor here in Chicago, contacted the main central station of Secret Service and found in their database that the defendant had been a CI for a short period of time and the agents who were responsible for supervising him. At that point, we did reach out to Agent Quinn and Agent Koch and found out that he had been a CI. That took a matter of several weeks to determine if he had been a CI, and more importantly, had he been a CI at the time of the offense. He had not been a CI at the time of the offense, and in fact, he was deactivated because he was trying to cash checks on the side while he was working for the Secret Service. The defendant initially gave the government the name of Matthew Quinn after we determined that he had been a CI as the controlling agent. Based on that, the court ordered that the government make Matthew Quinn available for a phone interview, which we did. And in that interview, Agent Quinn then detailed the status of the defendant's involvement with the Secret Service back in 2001.
Now, is the government claiming that the Secret Service actually does not have any sort of document for informing someone that their services are no longer required as a CI? Or is the contention simply that no official forms were used in this specific case?
The government is claiming, it's our position, that the Secret Service does not have a form in which they use to deactivate CIs. In fact, both Agent Koch and Agent Quinn testified on direct, and they were cross-examined extensively by the defendant as to the procedures in which CIs are deactivated. So this was a normal procedure. The Secret Service does not use a form or send out a pink slip or send out a letter to a defendant saying you are no longer working with the Secret Service as a CI. So the procedures were followed in this case. The defendant did receive a form when he was signed up as a CI, and that form detailed that he had to always follow the express direction of the Secret Service. The defendant at trial admitted that during the time of this conduct, he had not talked to Agent Quinn, he had not talked to Agent Koch, he had not informed them of his activities in this case. While he sat in trial and said, I am working as a CI today as I testify here in court, he's He still admitted that he hadn't spoken to either Agent Quinn or Agent Koch since 2001. So the belief that he was working deep cover is just not true.
Well, why? Maybe he was working for two other Secret Service agents or...
Well,
I mean...
Based on the information that we received finally in the database from the Secret Service, the defendant had been terminated as a CI in April of 2001.
Did he tell you he was working for another agent here?
No, he did not. He actually said that he was working for Agent Quinn. In fact, that is why...
The only names that you had were ones that he gave you.
Correct, Your Honor. And it's Agent Quinn that we've made available because the defendant said, that's who I'm working for. He didn't name any other agents part of the Secret Service or part of any other agency.
Now, are Assistant U.S. Attorneys Donahue's notes... From his conversation with Warren, are they covered by Rule 16, do you think? What do you think?
Your Honor, in this case, I think that they would have been covered by Rule 16. In this case, the defendant actually spoke with AUSA Donahue and several months before trial. He actually told defense counsel about that conversation in detail. He told him that Tony Warren phoned him, that he came in and proffered with his attorney. And at that time, he laid out everything that happened in the conversation. So the defendant had the information that was contained in the report.
Well, then, is it true that he's repeatedly requested a legible copy of the notes from that conversation?
He requested a copy the day that the assistant showed up. We actually provided him with the original handwritten copy. So his writing he could not have understood it, but the defendant had the original copy of the notes when he cross-examined the assistant. So he was provided a copy, but then he also was provided the original, and it was the original that he used to cross-examine Agent Donahue about. We did not turn over the original, but as soon as we were given the copy of the notes, and we were told about this from the assistant the night before, because the assistant didn't realize that he actually had the notes. We had been in contact with him throughout the investigation trying to figure out the status, and at that point he did not tell us that he had the notes, but all of the information that was contained in the notes had been relayed several months before trial to the defendant, so he actually had the information. The defendant's Brady arguments with respect to the notes from the agent, the handwritten notes from the assistant, and the non-existence of the form, even today he fails to state how the turnout of the trial would have been any different had he had that information. He was able to cross-examine both agents on the report. He was able to cross-examine the assistant. The report and the handwritten notes were not exculpatory. They were not impeaching. And again, there's nothing in his brief and today that he can say that the trial would have turned out any differently had he had them earlier.
Does the record tell us what happened to Studnicka?
Studnicka was arrested and he pled guilty and he actually testified at the trial.
I know that.
Okay.
Does the record tell us?
I'm not understanding your question. I'm sorry.
Will the record tell us his sentence?
Actually, yes, it will have his sentence in there. I don't know.
That's okay.
The record number, but it will be in there. In terms of the defendant's enhancement to sentencing, the defendant claims that he should not have received the enhancement because he admitted that he had engaged in the conduct. Your Honor, he admitted that he engaged in the conduct as a secret servant CI. He did not accept responsibility. In his testimony, it went on at length of describing all of the things that the agents directed him to do with respect to this entire scheme. He does not deserve to get acceptance because he did not actually admit that he committed the conduct. If there are no additional questions on the other issues, I respectfully ask the court to affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill, you know, you used your time up, but I'll give you a minute. I will give
thank
you.
I was trying to find it. I think Mr. Sunnicka received 16 months. That was the consideration that he got in return for his cooperation. Judges, we are merely asking that the matter be sent back and that we be given an opportunity to try this case with all of the cards on the table. I mean, these discovery violations and allowing them to persist sends the wrong message to the U.S. Attorney's Office. It says to them, you don't have to comply with these rules. If you get it, even if it's late, do the best you can with it and then argue, well, it was harmless even though we didn't do it. I'm respectfully asking that in light of the acknowledgement that it was covered by Rule 16, we didn't get it, that we be allowed a new trial with all of the evidence, and maybe the jury would come back with a different decision, assuming we had all of the discovery up front and not after we had rested our case. Thank you.
Forgive me, Mr. Hill. Did you say 16 or
16?
16, not 16. 16.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you.
And the case will be taken under advisement.